It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. And in 2019, after the U.S. women's soccer team won the World Cup championship against the Netherlands, the players took to the field and celebrated their victory. As the crowd cheered for the team's fourth World Cup win, cheers turned to chants for equal pay.
Equal pay! Equal pay! Equal pay! Equal pay!
The team first filed a federal equal pay complaint in 2016, followed by a gender discrimination suit against the U.S. Soccer Federation in March of 2019. Last month, the U.S. women's soccer team finally won a $24 million settlement. Here's star Megan Rapinoe reacting to the win.
It's a really amazing day. I think we're going to look back on this day and say this is the moment that, you know, U.S. soccer changed for the better.
Let's talk with Kelsey Trainer, entertainment attorney and VP of Business Affairs at Gaming Society. Welcome to The Takeaway, Kelsey.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with some history about the lawsuit. Just sort of walk us through how we got to that moment.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, it started in 2016. This has been going on for a very long time. In March of 2019, 28 national team players filed this lawsuit for claims for the Equal Pay Act and Title VII for pay discrimination. And then very recently, obviously, it settled for $24 million. But in between then, in May of 2020, the judge dismissed the equal pay portion of the U.S. women's national team lawsuit. So it was on appeal, which then led to this $24 million settlement.
Now, is the settlement, the suit and the settlement primarily about compensation, or are there other aspects here?
There's other aspects. So in December of 2020, the team actually settled the working condition claims. So that had to do with hotel accommodations, travel, working conditions, what fields they were playing on. So that was part of the case that was still ongoing, that was settled in the end of 2020. And so this portion of the settlement really just involved the equal pay aspect. So it's $24 million.
So obviously we heard some excitement there from Rapinoe, but Hope Solo, the former goalkeeper, tweeted that the settlement was heartbreaking and infuriating because of a contingency clause around collective bargaining. So I'm wondering, should we be happy? Should we be infuriated? What should we be feeling here?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think there was such a sigh of relief that this has been going on for so long. Now, the original lawsuit sought $67 million in back pay, right? So $24 million isn't exactly that massive celebration that we were all looking for. But at the end of the day, it's a very good amount of money and probably what most of us expected the settlement, if there was one, to be around. And then on the other side of that, you know, you have to remember that Hope Solo has her own lawsuit, a solo lawsuit, if you will, against U.S. soccer. And so while I agree to an extent with her about that, you know, it's a settlement. You did settle for maybe less than what you were seeking. But at the end of the day, these women were fighting for so long and they're elite athletes. So they were doing all of this on top of winning World Cups. So I think it's a little bit of both excitement and maybe a tiny bit of disappointment.
Help us to understand what $24 million is. Like, put that in perspective. For any individual person, $24 million is like, I've won the lottery. Let's go, you know, buy the big house. But help us understand what $24 million means in this context.
Yeah, so it's $22 million in back pay. I believe it's being paid out over 4 years. And it's to the 28 national team players that were a member of the class of that lawsuit. So when you break that down, it's still a good amount of money, but not that big flashy $22 million. And then $2 million of that goes to post-career charity fund money. And each player can apply for up to $50,000 from that future fund.
Okay. And then what are next steps? So that's some reparative action for those who were in the class from, you know, when you say back pay, it's also a really helpful way of thinking about who is affected, who is directly repaired by some of this. But going forward, what does it mean?
So U.S. soccer and the U.S. women's national team agreed to a equal rate of pay going forward for friendlies and tournaments. That still doesn't mean that the FIFA money, which has always been the huge contention, is going to be equal. But I think there's going to be a more united front between U.S. soccer and the U.S. women's national team to pressure FIFA versus it being only the U.S. women's national team. And obviously, this agreement is contingent on the new collective bargaining agreements between U.S. soccer and the men and U.S. soccer and the women being ratified. And that there's a deadline for that, which is March 31st of this year.
Okay. And can you sort of game that out for us a bit?
Yeah. So the men have been playing on an expired CBA for a bit, as well as the women. The men are going to have to essentially agree to some sort of pay cuts if there's going to be this equal prize money going forward. My understanding is that the U.S. women's national team and U.S. soccer would not have gone on national television and, you know, an international press tour touting this settlement if they weren't close on an agreement to ratify the new collective bargaining agreements. But I'm hearing kind of behind the scenes that the only hiccup may potentially be the men's side coming to an agreement with U.S. soccer, whereas I think the women are potentially agreed to most of the terms.
Now, there was just a U.S. soccer presidential election on March 5th. What were the results?
So Cindy Parlow Cohn, who took over for Carlos Cordero, who she ran against, won the election. It was pretty narrow. She won the election for a 4-year term. And this was a big part, I think, of why it was so important to get this settlement done recently. You know, you had that election, you had a March 7th court hearing in the case, and then the March 31st CBA deadline. So Cindy Parlow Cohn, she's a former player herself. She's been pretty busy. She appointed former U.S. Attorney Sally Yates to investigate reports of sexual and workplace misconduct in the NWSL. And she also very recently announced an 8-year deal with Turner Sports for the English language rights to broadcast the games. So there was a lot going on here. And the U.S. women's national team players came out against having Carlos Cordero as U.S. president. They endorsed Cindy Parlow Cohn. And you have to remember that Carlos was in charge of U.S. soccer. He was president of U.S. soccer when U.S. soccer released legal filings that essentially said that the U.S. women's national team and the U.S. women's players were unequal in skill and effort, therefore inferior to the men's national team, and therefore deserved less pay.
Hmm. Tell us about Bet on Women campaign.
Oh, yeah. The Bet on Women campaign is awesome. It's the WNBPA. It's their trademark, and Gaming Society, we use it as a way to propel women's sports forward. You know, the gaming industry is a massive industry, and there's not necessarily equitable lines and odds in the women's sports space. And so Bet on Women, it encompasses a number of things, but it's really about equalizing and getting more women and women's sports into the betting and gaming space.
Kelsey Trainer is entertainment attorney and VP of Business Affairs at Gaming Society. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.